This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm joined by Dr. Ishrat Isaac. I got a little bit carried away, Doc, in the intro, and Craig's flashing the ad break sign at me because this is something that's so important to me. So just before we get into it, I want to premise that, you know, firstly, a little bit of a lighthearted joke about it, that, you know, God has a strange plan for us when at the age we start to get interested in the opposite sex is the time we have the outbreaks on our face, right? And that's when the opposite sex is the least interested in us. But it can go far beyond that because, you know, they say the eyes are the windows to the soul, but the skin is the packaging in how we present ourselves to the world, and people take judgment on us. You know, if we have a skin condition or we have very bad acne, okay, you think, well, okay, they don't bathe, there's all of these issues. And when we're young, that can have a huge emotional impact on us. So I wanted to start off the show, and you've been in practice, so, you know, we were joking about the beard, for been seeing patients for nearly three decades. I'm actually down in Durban in your old haunting grounds. And, you know, it just... in your experience, how big an impact does our skin have on our lives, our mental health, and the way we interact with society?
I think you've touched on a very, very important point in the sense that our skin is what presents us as a person. And coming as South Africans, we should know the best about how our presentation impacts on how people judge us. Even before they've even spoken to us. Now, coming to your point about peer relationships and having relationships in your teens, the psychological impact of having poor skin is extremely significant. So much so that there are studies to show that having poor skin quality, and in particular having conditions like acne, can seriously reduce a patient's confidence, reduce their self-esteem, make them more socially recluse and aloof. And at a time in your life where you actually are looking for peer acceptance and you are looking to develop a larger social environment, your skin can really, really set you back. And in some of these studies, it actually shows that the psychological or the negative psychological impact of having acne is sometimes equal to or maybe worse than having conditions, chronic conditions like epilepsy, diabetes, or asthma, for that instance. So it's not an impact that is to be sneezed at and to be trivialized. And a lot of times you find that parents may, from their own personal experiences, they may decide that or think that the teenager or the child is being a bit of a drama queen by trying to impress upon them how much those two pimples are actually troubling them. But it certainly can result in people not wanting to interact socially. And now in this era of social media, where people are sometimes more comfortable interacting in a digital environment, it just fuels the fire whereby having somebody who's got poor self-esteem to then kind of even develop a completely different persona together with photographs and videos of themselves with overlaid filters on them, which then gives the public or gives their social circles, be it physical or be digital, the wrong impression about who they actually are and how they actually interact. So it's something that needs to be addressed. And we always encourage parents who've got children who've got these type of problems to have them sorted out as soon as possible, because there are also studies to show that having the sequelae of acne, in other words, the scars and the pigmentation, also has got an impact on your employability. Mm-hmm. And even at interviews, people begin to judge you as being a happier or a better person based on the fact that your skin actually may be clearer. So that data actually has been published. It's out there. So it's something that needs to be addressed. And if you look at, for example, a child who may not want to go to school because they've got severe nodular cystic acne, they may then be missing out on productive hours at school. And when this happens, they then begin to miss out on academics, and that begins to impact on their grade 11, their grade 12 academic performance, which then impacts upon their tertiary education, the tertiary applications, which then means that they may end up in a career path that may not be what they originally were planning to set out on. And therefore, that begins to impact on their social acceptability and on their employability and their financial situation going forward. So we may just be seeing a few pimples, but it has a long-lasting and far-reaching effect going way beyond school into the fifth and sixth decade of life.
So true, Doc. And just when you're talking about this, I'm remembering going out to social events at school, and so and we would have masks. Like it would look like a lipstick, and you would tap it on to cover up, and you'd have something to try and fast dry out a pimple, and all of these things that you're putting on that just to try and go out in public. But they're always there at the back of your mind when you're out there, and when you're not going out, you, as you said, you're not developing these skills in terms of interacting and learning how to interact with your peers, develop relationships.
Absolutely.
And now with masks on social media, you learn not to put out the real you. And that is just absolutely devastating in terms of quality of life. And I wanted to stress this point, the seriousness of this, because I've been there, I've lived it. You see this daily in your practice for nearly 3 decades and the impact that it has. And hopefully we can get maybe one or two stories out of you at the end of the show with patients that you've had the chance to work with and how it's improved their quality of life. Now that we've looked at sort of the severe impact, can we chat a little bit about the physiology, the biomechanics? Because as you said, with asthma or diabetes, it's a medical condition. If you have what we call bad skin, it doesn't mean you're a bad person or there's anything wrong with you. It's a medical condition. So can we run through sort of the biomechanics, the physiology?
So a lot of people have this impression that dry skin is only as a result of you not having applied a moisturizer on your skin. The biggest problem is that the outer layer of the skin, which is the epidermis, has got a kind of a brick wall type of organization or structure, whereby you have cells with ceramides that are in between them that help to keep them attached to each other. And when you have dry skin, essentially, what happens is that the, let's call it the cement between the bricks, then becomes problematic or defective or non-existent. And because of that, you now got yourself a situation whereby those bricks are beginning to no longer adhere or stick well to the adjacent cells. And therefore, gaps begin to appear. And as a result of those gaps between those bricks, many things happen. One being, you are now more predisposed to trans epidermal water loss. So that's water loss that occurs from the deep dermis that is able to now work its way through the gaps out into the environment. So that's the first thing that happens. And that further begins to exacerbate the dryness. As a result of that, you also end up having inflammation that occurs. So now you have more inflammatory chemicals that are then released by the cells in the area in an attempt to repair this particular problem. But that then leads to itching and redness that goes along with it. In addition to that, now that you've got gaps in the brick wall, you now lost the barrier protection function of the skin. So bacteria and fungi that normally live with us, they didn't get a chance to live inside us. And then they get a
Inside
chance to get through those gaps back into the skin, further driving the inflammation, and now you got yourself caught into an itch, scratch, inflammation cycle. So dry skin
but
results in
Doc, sorry to interrupt you. I just want to jump. We're going to go to ads and then I want to come back onto this because this is vitally important.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
This is Medical Monday brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm your host, Nicholas Ingle, and I'm joined by Dr. Ishrat Isak, healthcare practitioner specializing in dermatology. Let us have your questions for our guest on our studio WhatsApp number, 061 895 1019. Doc, If it wasn't for Craig, I would just talk because this is such an important topic for me and just listen to you, and we'd miss all the ad breaks and the show would probably go on for about 6 hours. So sorry for the interruption, but just before we went to ads, we were chatting about dry skin. Please, would you continue?
So I was talking about the itch scratch cycle. So what happens is that dry skin results in itch. Itch makes you scratch. When you scratch, you damage the skin's outer barrier function. That scratch then drives inflammatory chemicals that further inflame the skin. So now you have redness, and those inflammatory chemicals, for example, like histamine, further drive the itch. So now you've got yourself caught into this itch scratch cycle that you need to be able to break in order for you to get the skin's barrier functioning properly, so you can keep the water in and you can keep the baddies out. And remember something, a lot of people have this impression that, well, if I wet my skin, I'm able to moisturize it. In the normal sequence of events, your skin's not designed to simply imbibe or take water directly in through the epidermis. It usually has to be bound with something else, and usually that's a moisturizer. And so therefore, by trying to wash your skin more frequently or wet it more frequently, you're not necessarily moisturizing it. So you've got to get water down into the dermis of the skin in order for your skin to have a good skin quality, bearing in mind that a drier skin takes firstly longer to heal, is more likely to scar, and with any skin condition for that matter. So you've got to make sure that a well-hydrated skin certainly will hold you in good stead in the long run.
Right. I think if we look at that, I mean, and the practicalities of sort of drinking water and moisturizing, and then also learning not to scratch, and how important also is keeping our hands clean because we do tend to touch our face without knowing.
So there's always advantages to drinking a fair amount of water. Water that you drink enters into the vascular system and eventually makes its way into the dermis. So there is an advantage in drinking water. But there's only so much that you can hydrate your skin by drinking water. And therefore, moisturizers from the outside certainly have got a lot of value. The other thing is that you mentioned just now was the issue about keeping your hands clean. Now, that's sometimes easier said than done. During COVID, everybody went crazy about sanitizers and hygiene, and that was necessary at that point in time. But yes, in our general day-to-day activities, we do touch surfaces, for example, that may be carrying higher bacterial loads than usual. Things like escalator, handrails, lift buttons. Just being at a countertop in a supermarket certainly will give you a high bacterial load. But your skin is generally, in the normal situation, able to cope with those type of bacterial insults that may occur. It is in the compromised skin, or it's in the defective skin barrier, that then drives the problem. Now we get ourselves in a situation whereby we get certain people who, when they hear this, they want to hand wash more frequently. But then more frequent hand washing also tends to disrupt and erode the outer layer of the skin again. So if you look at occupations that require regular hand washing, chefs, hairdressers, for example, they are far more prone to the development of a hand eczema or a dryness that occurs on the palms because of the excessive hand washing, with or without the use of some sort of sanitizing agent or detergent agent or a soapy agent. So they run the risk of actually compounding the problem by overwashing. Yes, I do understand, for example, doctors like myself, I would wash hands, I won't even say several, but dozens of times a day, because I'm constantly touching patients, and I certainly want to ensure that I'm not cross-infecting patients. So that is a requirement for my particular occupation. But in the general scheme of things, average wa hand washing before you eat, after you eat, you go to the toilet after it, those are simple hand washing procedures. But we must take care also to not end up on the other extreme, where we become obsessive compulsive, such that we are now getting to the point of becoming obs getting an obsessive compulsive disorder, where we are washing so frequently that is now becoming detrimental to our outer layer of skin. So hand washing in moderation based on specific situations is more than adequate for most people.
And so that can also apply to overwashing of the face, because
absolutely,
I was so conscious of what was going on my face that wake up in the morning, wash, go outside for first break at school, just come back, wash and wipe with a towel because I've oily skin. So overwashing of the face can also be problematic.
There's this common misconception that having acne, and mainly the whiteheads and blackheads type of acne, that this is as a result of poor skin hygiene that's resulting in my acne, and therefore I need to wash my face more frequently. In fact, that's quite the contrary. The blackheads that occur in acne are as a result of sebum, which is the oily substance in the skin, that when it is plugged into the pores, it has got an access to the environment outside and the oxygen. It is the sebum that is oxidizing in a reaction with oxygen that turns it black. It's got nothing to do with how often you're washing and your washing technique. It is excessive oil and sebum that is oxidizing. That's what leads to the blackhead. And by you excessively washing, you are then going to also wash away good bacteria, because we've now begun to find, and there's a lot of focus on this in dermocosmetics at the moment, that the microbiome of the skin is exceptionally important in your barrier function. And the indiscriminate use of antibiotics may take away good bacteria in as much as they take away the bad bacteria. And it's this, there's this complex interplay and balance between good and bad bacteria that your skin requires in order for it to function properly. So by your overwashing, you are going to disrupt the skin barrier, wash away the good bacteria, and then maybe create more problems for your skin along the way. So I generally recommend to my patients twice a day washing, once in the morning, once in the evening, because in the evening, you also have been encountering a whole lot of pollutants that settle on your skin. Wash that off, medicate in the evening, and then moisturize. And twice a day washing with a bland cleanser is more than adequate for somebody who's got acne. And I know you now want to take yourself your news break.
No. We have a message from the guest. We got quite a few, so I'm going to jump into that now. But just before we do, I wanted to also touch on sort of oily skin. But for people, just before we go into that, you mentioned sort of good bacteria, bad bacteria. We know how important that is in terms of our gut health and our gut biome. But our skin is the biggest organ in our body. So bacteria is going to play a role on that, right? So I think that's absolutely fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit more about the work that's being done on that, on sort of the value of the skin?
So we know that in certain skin conditions where certain bacteria certainly are the primary problem. For example, things like impetigo, abscesses, carbuncles, furuncles. We know that certain bacteria are the primary issue and they basically overwhelm the skin or a skin unit. And what I mean by that is either the hair follicle or the sebaceous gland gets infected or the apocrine gland gets infected. Those are a different set of superficial skin diseases. But coming to, let's take the acne scenario. We've always known that bacteria, Cutibacterium acne, is one of the contributing factors for the development of acne. That's what actually drives or partly drives that entire inflammatory process that results in those nodules and cysts and those, I want to call it what it is, those juicy pustules that you are so tempted to want to burst. But we've now come to realize that the skin microbiome, there are good bacteria as well and different phylotypes of Cutibacterium acne that helps in keeping the inflammatory chemicals also in check. And now we are focusing a lot more in when it comes to dermocosmetics to be able to restore that microbiome. So there's lots of talk about people using postbiotics in their creams in order to restore that balance. So not all bacteria on the skin are bad, and not all the bacteria on your skin are causing your acne. It is the disruptive balance between the two or the imbalance that results in driving the inflammation. Okay. So as much as antibiotics have a role to play, restoring that balance is exceptionally important.
That's absolutely phenomenal. It's fascinating. And What I love about where the science is moving, we learn more and more what we can do to help ourselves. I want to go into a couple of questions from our listeners, and then we can touch on oily skin. The first question is, hi, I developed a very dry facial skin condition from blood pressure medication. I had help to alleviate initial dryness, but am still left with skin that feels gravelly, as if sandy. This condition also affects my scalp. I use various moisturizers and shampoos, but none of this helps. Where do I go from here? I would appreciate some advice. Regards, Ivy.
I think that on a show like this, I appreciate your detailed history you've just basically given me, but I don't think that we are going to be in a position where we can make diagnoses. So I would firstly suggest that you see a dermatologist. That's the first thing. However, with the info that you've given me, I think there are certain things that you also may want to consider. So you mentioned that they may be a matter of having had dry skin whilst you were on some sort of hypertension medication. We also got to ask ourselves, is this certainly a true dry skin type of scenario whereby the patient has got a difficulty or an inability to bind down and hold on to water? So that's one possibility. The next possibility is this particular person developing a low-grade chronic drug reaction to the blood pressure medication? And I would assume that this person is an older patient based on the fact that they've got hypertension. So are they developing a medication reaction to the blood pressure medication, which can also present itself as gravelly skin with poor skin texture? The third thing that this person may be having is a fair amount of photo or sun damage. And again, assuming that this is an older patient, that can also result in poor hydration of the skin, more fine lines and wrinkles. And that may require not only moisturizers, but skin boosters with hyaluronic acid may be an option for this particular person. Again, this needs to be properly assessed. Now, when they mentioned that they've got a scalp involvement that goes with this, there are certain conditions like eczema and seborrheic dermatitis that are disease processes that need to be addressed and may not be only dry skin. So dry skin can be a sign of many other dermatological problems. So it's not necessarily a one size fits all. So my suggestion is have a derm to check you out, preferably somebody who can examine you with a dermatoscope, examine the scalp itself, and then work your way from there so that the correct diagnosis is made and the correct approach to your particular symptoms are then employed in this particular case.
Fantastic. Doc, and I know, and we appreciate your answer, how difficult it is to give a diagnosis or an answer that people are looking for with minimal information. One more question, and then we can either go to ads or touch on oil, start on oily skin. It says, hi, Nicholas. Can you ask the doctor if there is any solution for venous eczema on the legs?
So, venous stasis eczema usually is as a result of poor vascular clearance from the legs itself, usually associated with varicosities or vein problems, where your veins basically cannot clear the deoxygenated blood from your legs. This may result in several things. One, dry skin. Two, it progresses into chronic venous stasis eczema. You then can also get a condition called lipodermatosclerosis, whereby the fat layer of the skin also becomes involved, and you may end up having the skin begins to have this bound down or stuck down appearance onto the bones of the lower limb, such that it may be so severe such that it looks like an inverted champagne bottle, whereby the calf on the top is thickened and the lower part near the ankle is more like the neck of the champagne bottle. Going further, because of poor circulation in the leg, you easily have skin breakdown with subsequent ulceration. Now, this particular problem is a multidisciplinary problem. And what I mean by that is you're going to require a wound care team to be on board if there is ulceration. You're also going to require the assistance of a vascular surgeon and certainly going to require the assistance of a dermatologist, together with things like compression stockings and limb elevation. So I would suggest, yes, there are things that can be done, difficult to treat, but yes, can be treated. If you're properly assessed, certainly things can be done to assist you.
Fantastic. Thank you, Doc. We're going to go to ads. When we come back, we'll touch on oily skin. And then when we wrap up the show, would like your input on sort of what we can do in our day-to-day lives to look after our skin.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Absolutely loving this show so far. We're chatting with Dr. Ishrat Isak, healthcare practitioner specializing in dermatologist. As a dermatologist, we're chatting about skin and oily skin, dry skin, the impacts that we can have. We've got some great questions from our listeners. Doc, we've touched on quite a lot, dry skin. Let's go into oily skin and how it works, what are the mechanics behind it. And again, stressing that, you know, how your skin functions is just how your health functions. It's not an indicator on your quality and value as a person.
Absolutely. I think oily skin is a little bit of a different concept. And from the outset, I want to say, and I'll explain this a bit later, that you can have an oily and a dry skin at the same time. But let me explain. So earlier I was talking about dry skin where you have a difficulty or an inability to hold on to water. Remember, water is a hydration concept. When it comes to oily skin, you have a gland that is called the sebaceous gland. Then that produces sebum. And that's the main component of the oil that occurs on your face or on your skin, for example. And sebaceous glands have got a very high concentration or density on your face. And the sebaceous gland is intimately structurally involved with the hair follicle. Now, in an oily skin, your sebaceous gland basically is either too large or it is overproductive of the oil. And that particular oil then begins to clog up what people will say are the pores. And it clogs up the sebaceous gland outlet and it also clogs up the hair follicle outlet. Now you've got this sebum that is now stuck behind a clogged gland or a clogged pore. Mm-hmm. And then that also provides a good environment or a food source for the bacteria that actually drive acne. And having an overproductive oil gland or excessive oil in your face largely results in the development of acne. The extent to which this occurs will dictate whether you develop something as simple as whiteheads or blackheads or whether you're going to develop nodular cystic acne. But mm-hmm. oily skin certainly is the main or one of the fundamental issues that is dysregulated in an acne skin. Now, remember I said that hydration is a water concept and mm-hmm. oil or sebum is a different concept completely. So you can have excessive oil and have poor hydration at the same time in the same skin.
How does that, in terms of the whiteheads, the blackheads, and then the deeper cysts, is this something that sort of, if it's left untreated, moves from one to the other? Can we have this all together, or is it really dependent on how serious the production or the overactivity of the gland is?
So in the majority of cases, you'll find that there's kind of an evolution in terms of severity. So when the problem is in its early stages, grade zero, grade one acne, mm-hmm. is where you have the whiteheads and blackheads that come along. That if left untreated, the inflammation continues, the oil production continues unabated, and that then will evolve into those pimples and pustules that we want to basically squeeze. Mm-hmm. And as time goes by, that...
Sorry to interrupt. Not necessarily us. It's usually parents or grandparents also
absolutely.
That come up
absolutely.
And attack us.
you are absolutely correct. Sometimes it's not the patient themselves, but it is somebody who they are close to, who's got easy access to them on an evening basis, and they want to go through popping these type of pimples. And it's probably not a good idea, because what it does is, one, it drives the inflammation, and number mm-hmm. two, it actually drives the scarring. So mm-hmm. when you get to that grade two acne of those pimples, left untreated, the inflammation continues, the infection continues, and so does the oil production continues, which then ends up giving you those nodules and cysts that develop, where you have those deep-seated areas that causes a fair amount of destruction in the dermal layer. And
right.
as if these patients tend to have them treated, one of the consequences of that are those crater-like scars that they develop. And that certainly is something that you want to firstly avoid. But now these days, we also have mechanisms to be able to treat that. So you want to address the oily skin first, sort out the acne, reduce the oil production, reduce the inflammation, reduce the infection. Settle that down and then go and deal with the sequelae, which is going to be the pigmentation and the scarring at a later stage.
Right. Okay. I think what I'd like to touch on just before as we start to wrap up the show, what is the process? Someone has a skin condition, they're presenting with acne or with skin problems, they're coming to the dermatologist. What is the process? How do you deal with them? How long does it go on for? And I'm sure this is obviously in relation to specific conditions, but if we're looking at sort of your acne and your dry skin and oily skin, coming to the dermatologist, what's the process?
Now, let's use acne as an example, and I'm glad you touched upon this about this maybe being a long-term problem. In the late 2000s, 2007 to around 2009, the American Academy of Dermatology began to then recognize acne as being a chronic disease. A chronic disease, not just a condition, a disease.
Sure.
And some of the reasons for that is one, acne will undergo a relapsing course, so it gets better and may get worse and get better and get worse. Two, as we discussed at the very beginning of the show, acne has got a psychological impact having that is similar to having other chronic diseases. And you'll find that certain patients will require repeated courses or different courses of medication to actually control their disease. And based on some of those criteria, they decided that acne should now be viewed as a chronic disease. That's the first thing.
Wow.
So when patients basically come into my practice, I first try to work out where in the sequence of events are they, because you can't do everything at the same time. My approach generally is that, and I use the word generally because there are a few exceptions, that we first need to put to bed the disease process, sort out the inflammation, the infection, the excessive oil production. So we then go usually for medical treatments for that, be they topically applied treatments, oral treatments. Is where we would generally go together with cleansers and moisturizers and other dermacosmetic treatments. So that'll be usually my first phase of treatment. Settle the disease first. And I know that at the end of that period, I'm going to have sequelae, pigmentation and scars being the two commonest ones. I then move the patient into some sort of reparative mode thereafter. So treat the complications. Once the complications have improved, then you can start looking at doing what we call enhancements. So then your toxin treatments, your biostimulators, fillers, that type of thing goes thereafter. Because there's no point in you trying to paint your house if it is still on fire. There's no point in doing a renovation and do an enhancement if the house is still on fire. You've got to sort out the active disease process first, then deal with complications, and then deal with enhancements. Now, that's usually my algorithm. Now, what people need to understand is that being a chronic disease, you can't sort this out 4 weeks before your matric dance. You've given the doctor a very short timeline to play with. You're not going to get the results. That's the first thing. The second thing is that having a medical disease process that is going on, sometimes your over-the-counter items on, not that they're bad, but on their own may not be adequate for this severity of disease. Having somebody offer you a non-prescription procedure, chemical peel, again, there is value in that, but usually not on their own when you've got rip-roaring cysts on your face. So you need to be able to prioritize the problems, and that's where the dermatologists come in, because you can't throw everything and the kitchen sink at this, not all at the same time. There are things that are available, but you need to prioritize the problem as you begin to unravel this.
I love it. Doc, we're going to go to ad break, and I know we're running out of time. There are so many questions that I have and that I'd like to get into. So, but we'll wrap up as quickly as we can and cover as much as possible. I'm chatting with Dr. Ishrad Ishak, and he is a healthcare practitioner and dermatologist. Let's go to ads, and we'll come back after that with the doctor.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Nicholas Ingle and I'm chatting with Dr. Ishrat Isaac, dermatologist. Such an important topic for me. Doc, just before, as we wrap up the show, I wanted to get your advice on what people can do in order to support the work that they're doing with the dermatologists, even if they're not able to get medical treatment, what can they do? But just before we do that, I wanted to say, I think it's the best, what, some of the best news I've heard in a long time, that acne skin conditions, this acne is being seen now as a chronic disease. And I think it's going to be a huge help to young people understanding that there's nothing wrong with them in terms of what's happening on their face and on their body.
I think it's very, very important to give, and I'm going to call it what it is. These are sufferers of a disease. To give the sufferers of the disease an idea that what's happened to them is not weird. They are not different. They are not to be ostracized. They are not to be criticized. They're not to be judged. The majority of people worldwide will experience acne to some extent in their lives. Mm-hmm. Whether they become a patient by approaching a practitioner for assistance largely depends upon individual person's tolerance of disease. So, for example, if you have pain, if your pain threshold is high and you can tolerate for a little bit longer, you're probably not going to end up seeing an orthopedic surgeon as soon as everybody else. So that's the difference between a patient with acne and a person with acne. But that is a worldwide phenomenon. Now, so people need to understand that what's happening to me is not weird. I don't need to be locked up in my bedroom and only interacting with people via social media platforms. You need to basically go out because that's the best time of your life. And you're going to be robbing yourself of that social interaction. Everybody has acne.
Yeah.
The next thing is that coming to what they can be doing on a day-to-day basis. And we're going to keep this very simple and generic and not go into any specifics. But cleansing your face twice a day is exceptionally important. Two times a day is more than adequate. Yes, there are instances where we would reduce or we would increase that frequency. But I suppose you would be expecting some sort of direct advice from a dermatologist after a consultation. But generally, twice a day should be adequate. The next thing is, for those of you who are using makeup, you are concealing it, you are not treating it. Have the acne treated. But if you have to use makeup, whether it's in a work environment, social environment, school environment, yes, we understand. Just don't put so much of base and foundation on board where you can build a skyscraper on it. It's not necessary. And when you get to bed at night, please make sure you remove your makeup. Do not sleep with the makeup. No matter how late you've been out partying, come back, allocate some time, allocate some energy to do it. Remove your makeup with preferably a micellar water that can remove your makeup, and then wash your face and cleanse your face. You've been out in a club, you've been out in a restaurant, you've been exposed to pollutants, smoke, that type of thing. Wash your face before you go to bed. The next thing is moisturize. Moisturize with a product that you are comfortable with, a product that meets your price point, because there's many, many different moisturizers. All moisturizers are not the same. They have specific ingredients for certain types of skin, but generally look for something that's bland, that doesn't have any actives, that your skin is going to tolerate. If it's going to be anything more complicated, then I think a dermatologist should be advising you, because they will take into consideration your other topical treatments and your oral treatments. Mm-hmm. And then a sunscreen. Sunscreens are exceptionally important, not only from a sunburn point of view, but also from a photo aging point of view. So we need to just simply simplify your skincare regime. Less is better. And at the heart of your skincare regime, you should be having simply a cleanser, a moisturizer, and a sunscreen. Other products like serums and toners, you need advice on that.
Okay. Absolutely fantastic, Doc, and sorry that we're running out of time. That's great advice. I love that. And it's very simple, and we're not our skin. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Ishrat Isaac, dermatologist. Thank you for joining us, our fantastic listeners. Sorry about the blocked nose, and I will chat with you guys next week. This has been the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show here on 101.9 High FM, and I'm your host, Nicholas Ingle. Thank you to Craig, our controller, and Sina, our producer. Thank you.